Hi, everybody. Thanks for being here. I know my Facebook said four, so some of you have been very, very patient. Our session was supposed to start at 4:30, and we're having some last-minute changes, and one of our delegates is running late. And so we appreciate your patience. We're going to start in just a few minutes. We've just had a last-minute change in terms of one of our speakers, and we're hoping that the last one is able to make it while we're miking everybody up. So sit tight. It's going to be a great session. We'll get started in a few minutes, and thanks again for being here. Oh, do you want to put them in front? I said we would put them in front of us.
If you want to start.
Where did mine go?
I think we should just start.
We're going to.
We didn't put ours.
Okay. Okay. So can you put your name tags in front of you? Because I told the photographer that you would be identified by your thing.
Hey. Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. Hi, we met. Yes, we did. And we met before? No, yeah. In Tony Lake. How are you?
Okay, we're going to go back to the
And Stephanie?
Hello,
so
sorry,
we're kind of separated, so you'll be
coming
across.
Take photos of me.
Okay, good.
It's very strange for me to be here, because now this has changed everything.
Will you be attending the full conference, or do you just...
No, I have to go back to New York tomorrow.
Oh, I see.
I'm very, very busy on... I'll talk about it a little bit, designing a new strategy for UNICEF to reach more into the poorest areas.
That's great.
And it's taking a lot of work, so I'll be doing that.
So should we have...
But I had to come here for this, because this is so important.
Were you here for the opening yesterday?
I was, yeah. It was great. Yeah.
I guess so.
A general milling about here.
San Bonanno.
Sorry?
They're just milling about here, I guess.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
tell everybody to come close.
Thank you.
Hi. Can you hear me? Hello. Hi, it's me again. Just to let you know, we would love for this session to be as interactive as possible. So I understand it's late in the day and some of you might not be completely committed to being in this session and you want to sit in the back, that's okay. However, just so you know, if you do want to participate, we are only going to be using the front two mics. So if you want to be able to ask questions of both our youth delegates and our adult delegates, it would be important for you to position yourselves close to these front mics. And we're also going to be trying to make it really interactive and have a back and forth. So the closer to the front you are, the more interactive it's going to be able to be for you. And I think we're going to get started.
Can I say something?
Yes.
You just reminded me, and I should have warned you first. I once chaired a panel many, many years ago in a room this size. And there were probably 30 people there. It was at the very end of a three-day conference. And so I suggested that they move down in front. And I apparently woke up about 20 of them who had just gone to sleep because they were in the back of the room. They all stood up, they took one look at me, and then they all walked out. So I hope that that you all will move down so that we can have a conversation.
Thank you. It was funny, actually, when we were in here on the break, the volunteer coordinator for this room was actually concerned because somebody was sleeping on one of the benches, and he was like, what should we do? Should we wake him up and send him out? And they're like, no, let him sleep. More people in the room.
Well, wait till I start speaking, and I can guarantee at least 50 will be asleep within...
So we're still waiting for one of our presenters, but we're going to get started because we have a lot that we want to cover. My name is Caitlin Padgett. I'm from Canada. I currently live in Cambodia. I've been involved in HIV/AIDS and harm reduction work for a long time, and I'm very honored to be co-moderating this panel.
Hello, good afternoon. My name is Elizabeth Fadul. I'm from Dominican Republic. I'm also a youth activist and advocate, and I've been working for several years in HIV prevention in regards to young people. And I'm also very happy to be here. And thank you all for coming to this session, this youth symposium on providing leadership on AIDS and demanding accountability. This session won't consist of the typical presentations, but rather what we want to do is motivate sort of a dialogue between the panelists and also with you as the audience. We feel that this session comes at an important time when discussions are being held in regards to being accountable, in regards to what that means, and also on retaking back what are the commitments that have been made and what it, does it really mean to ensure human rights for young people. So we're going to start.
So as Elizabeth said, we're going to focus on the question of accountability. That was the title of the session, and that's really what we're going to try to focus on because we have many different issues that are represented by both the youth speakers and the adult panelists. And so we could get caught up in a lot of different areas, and we want to try to stay focused and concise and really look at what are the gaps between what the actual commitments are that are being made, what is put down on paper as policy, what adult leaders have signed up to, and what actually is happening for young people, and hopefully get beyond some of the usual conversations and the rhetoric and really look at what the actual issues are and the challenges are around youth participation and accountability, and also asking ourselves questions like who holds who accountable. You know, it's not one-sided. We need to have it go both ways. And we also want to make sure that this session isn't tokenistic, because I feel like I know for myself, sometimes it feels like we have these conversations over and over and over again, and nothing really changes. So we hope that this session will be productive and that we're not all going to be sitting in this room 2 years from now asking ourselves the same questions and how do we ensure accountability and hold each other accountable. So feel free to ask challenging questions. We hope that that's what will be happening up here. And as I mentioned, these are the microphones that we're going to be using. So we're going to start with a little bit of a discussion with the panelists that we have on the stage, and then we're going to ensure that there's lots of time for discussion from you as well.
So as Caitlin mentioned, we're assigning a lot of time for discussions, so we're going to ask the panelists and also the audience to please, please stick to the time limits we give you, because we want to assure a lot of interactivity and a lot of dynamic between you. We also ask the audience to, since our first part of the session is gonna be a dialogue, to observe the cross-cutting themes and also look into what's not being said and what are the gaps that we're not targeting, because we wanna reflect on that and also reflect on what does it really mean to be accountable. So I think we're going to start. First of all, let me introduce you to the panel. We have four youth leaders. Stephanie Raper from Australia, Nikhil Gurung from Nepal, Ricardo Baroche from Mexico, and Nkonso Kanyile from South Africa. We also have three adult leaders on the panel. It's Anthony Lake, the executive director of the United Nations Children Fund, UNICEF. We also invited Dr. Aaron Mozzoleri, the minister of South Africa. Unfortunately, he could not be here, and he sent Ms. Henrietta Bokopane Zulu. She's the Deputy Minister of Public Work and Chair of the Interparliamentary Union on AIDS, on the AIDS Working Group. And we also have Dr. Michelle Kasachkin, the Executive Director of the Global Fund, who will be here shortly. So
one last thing before the youth leaders spend a little bit more time introducing themselves. We just wanted to say that it's a risky thing to come and sit up here on this panel. And as we were preparing for this session, some of the conversations we had amongst those of us who are participating is that it's not always a safe thing to do, to, as a young leader, to come up and to take a stand on issues. A lot of times, I think, as young people, we feel like we have a lot to lose, that we fought for a lot, but that it could easily be taken away. And so I just want to acknowledge that that all of us, I think, are coming here with that in mind. And I think that it's a very brave and courageous thing that our panelists are doing to be here. And they've committed to being as honest as they can be. And I think also for our adult leaders as well, it's risky to say, yes, we will be held accountable. We'll sit in the hot seat, so to speak, and answer your questions. That being said, we also want to make sure that there's follow through, that it's not just what happens here on the stage, that we continue the conversation and ensure that the commitments are followed through on. And I guess in acknowledging that, we'll hand things over very briefly to our... Also, I should just say, we had super, super last-minute changes. Mm-hmm. So we initially thought we were accommodating a certain time slot, and then we've kind of switched everything around. So if it seems like we're a little discombobulated, we are. and so bear with us, but hopefully that will enhance the informal and I think friendly atmosphere we have up here, because we've just had to kind of work together and be really quick on our feet. So we'll get started.
Yep. So basically we're going to start with Nkonso and ask him to say a little bit about his work experience. Just briefly, 1 minute, please.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Nkonso J. Kanyile from South Africa. I'm a gender activist. I've been involved in youth leadership participation for over 10 years now, and I'm glad to be here. Also, I just want to acknowledge the Deputy Minister to be part of this, and though I felt a bit disappointed that the Minister of Health couldn't make it, but I'm really pleased that she has joined us. Thank you.
We're going to go to the youth leaders first.
Okay. Hello, everybody. Buenas tardes. My name is Ricardo Baruch from Mexico. I've been an activist for about 10 years, and I've been doing a lot of work on gay rights in my country and my region, and also HIV prevention, especially comprehensive sexuality education. And right now, I'm focusing more attention on youth involvement on the different work that the Global Fund to Fight HIV, AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria around the world is doing. So I'm very excited about this session and about all the things that not only here, but during the whole week, we can do together to make sure that something happens there.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. My name is Nikhil Gurung. I'm a young person with a history of drug use. I'm from Nepal, one of the 14th poorest country in the world. I've been working in harm reduction and HIV/AIDS since 2004. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Stephanie. I was born with HIV in Australia 18 years ago. I've been very interested in what HIV is, obviously from a personal point of view, but also as a young person and as a woman. I'm Vice Chair of Positive Women Australia Victoria, and we're trying to go national at the moment for positive women's issues. But also I'm very interested in how people who are born with HIV can now get on the world stage instead of being talked about and cuddled, because now we're starting to become adults and we really need a voice on the main stage.
Thank you. We're going to ask Mr. Anthony Lake, Executive Director of UNICEF, if you could shortly describe the UNICEF's current commitment to youth participation and your accountability mechanisms as they relate to ensuring universal access for young people.
Well, I am, as you may have gathered, Tony Lake, and I'm here partly as a part of the commitment that UNICEF is making. And it is an absolute commitment to this issue and to 100% access to treatment. And we are completely committed to that, and nothing I have heard since I got here would change that one little bit. In terms of accountability, I think the most important accountability that you can have is to yourself and to your own organization. And if all of us at UNICEF are not absolutely accountable to ourselves and to each other within UNICEF on a cause as important as this, then we are doing something terribly wrong, And a part of the accountability then is to come up here on this stage. And now you tell me it's risky to be up here. Thank you very much. And to hold ourselves accountable. And I'm looking forward to the discussion. And I'm kind of glad to have all of you almost to myself, together with my colleague from South Africa.
Okay, well, thank you. If you could also answer the same question and describe how the government of South Africa currently commits to youth participation and its accountability mechanisms as they relate to reaching universal access for young people.
Good afternoon, and as said, my name is Henrietta, and I'll try to assist with the pronunciation of my surname. It's Bogopane Zulu, and I would be standing in for the Minister of Health, and I am the, I would say, one of the young deputy ministers in governments around the world, because I think we're the youngest upcoming ministers in the South African cabinet. Well, South Africa has a lot of challenges, but also a lot of successes in terms of young, in terms of youth issues. We had the Youth Commission, which we have just replaced with the National Development Youth Agency, just as an indication in terms of the focus on issues of young people. We've got, in terms of accounting mechanisms, I was one of the first chairpersons of the Parliamentary Committee on the Improvement of Qualities of Life of Children, Youth, and People with Disabilities, and that committee was intended as a parliamentary committee that would actually oversee whether government is meeting its commitments to young people, just as a beginning in terms of accountability mechanisms. South Africa Funds are one of the brands that I think a lot of people sitting in the room would know. From our own fiscus, we contribute to the Love Life program, which is also a program intended to reach as many young people in terms of HIV and AIDS. So there's a lot of challenges, of course, but there's also a lot of successes, and there is a lot of accounting mechanisms, because the same parliamentary program in the National Assembly is replicated in the 9 provinces, and that gives at a service delivery process with focal people in every national department. We do have what we call the focal youth people that look at ensuring that young people are integrated. With regards to universal access, indeed, young people are actually prioritized. On the list, there's a number of, if you look at the criteria and the guidelines of South Africa, in terms of access to ARVs, they look at a number of things, issues of gender, because we do have issues of young women as an active program. And to show actually that we have established a new ministry that just started a year ago, that is the Ministry on Children, People with Disabilities and Women, so that we are able, and young people, so that we are able to zoom in and ensure that young people actually benefit from the many programs that the South African government is rolling out for young people. And that includes access to ARVs. And actually 40% of the 1 million mark that we are about to reach on people on treatment is young people.
Okay, thank you. I would like to take this opportunity also to welcome our third panelist, a third adult panelist, who is Dr. Michelle Kasachkin. And, well, as a welcome to you, we would like
to
ask you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I apologize for being late. We're just running from one thing to another, so I'm really sorry.
Well, as a welcome, we would like to ask you a question. If you could please describe... If you could please describe the Global Fund's current commitment to youth participation and your accountability mechanisms as they relate to ensuring universal access for young people.
Yeah, thank you. Again, sorry to the audience for being late, and thank you very much for inviting me to this panel. I've been listening to the youth session in Bali, and what you just mentioned in terms of accountability and also the capacity building and the resources were the key themes that came up at that time. So let, if I now focus on the Global Fund, the issue of participation of youth, I must say, is something that all of us need to work harder together. We've made progress, but we're still somewhere behind where we should be and where we would wish to be. There are two levels of our governance system where I would very much hope that we have more youth participation in our decisions. One is at the country level in what we call the country coordinating mechanisms, which is the entity, as you know, that designs the programs and then sends the requests for funding to the Global Fund. And then there's our board. At the CCM level, of the 140 countries in which the Global Fund fund programs, it's 48 to countries in which youth is represented. So as you can see, this is less than the third, basically. And this is where we need a lot of progress. And I'll be happy to interact with the panel and all of you in the audience to think about what are the reasons for that and how we can improve that situation for a truly meaningful representation of youth on the CCMs. At our board, we did have an excellent, what I thought was a very good discussion around meaningful participation of youth on our board at the time of the Addis Ababa board that we had in November 2009. That discussion was stimulated particularly by our colleagues from what we call the 0.7 delegation from the Nordics, Sigrun Mogedal, Mareke, who is the ambassador from Holland and now the board member, helped a lot in that discussion. And we actually have now, within our delegation of the 0.7 constituency, a person from youth as such in the delegation on our board. That's Shanti, I suppose. Oh, here you are. Why don't you stand up so that... And so Shanti is now a board member of the Global Fund. I think that's extremely meaningful, and perhaps we could have Shanti say a few words. But I would encourage all of you to work on having more Shantis on our board, perhaps we could clone you somehow, and have really work on having delegations include a youth representative. I'm sure that's possible. That requires energy, political commitment, advocacy, all of that at the same time. So that's about where we are at our governance level. That's progress. It's certainly not up to where we would like to be. And I'd like to say to everyone, I'm truly committed for that to change. And I do hope that it changes fast. But when I actually see the mobilization of youth at this particular conference, I feel quite confident it will happen.
Great, thank you. So just to go over format again really quickly, I know we have some specific questions and responses from our panelists. As we mentioned, they're a very diverse group. So we want to get the conversation started with the youth panelists who are up here and have a bit of a back and forth. And then we're going to turn it over to the floor. And I realized I was shaking my head when you said cloning Shanti, and I don't even know you, and it's nothing against you. The reason why is because we're such a diverse group of young people. And I was like, no, we don't want everybody to be exactly the same. And I think that was my response. And so I think that that's a good segue into the fact that we have this really incredibly diverse group of people out here and in here. And I think we need to look at how as many of us as possible can be involved. And we definitely do want to hear from Shanti, I think there might be a chance towards the end to talk about your experience as the first board member for the Global Fund towards the end. So in terms of, maybe we'll just start on this side, and we'll have Nakonzo ask a question first, if you wanted to ask a question of one of the leaders, and we'll have a chance to follow up on that question, and then we'll continue on. How does that sound?
Okay.
Unless you don't want to go first.
For me, pass on, might. But it's okay. Maybe my first question will be posed to the minister, deputy minister there. It's more on just acknowledging youth participation and what it truly means, especially with what the minister has actually mentioned in terms of South Africans being pushing young people, putting more initiatives around young people and so forth. My first question is, what is the representation of young people within, you know, policy development level, this one? And also, with that done, what is the dissemination procedure in terms of someone who wouldn't be able to access such information at that particular level, someone who just stays in a rural area? Is there a mechanism that, for instance, maybe someone like me, who stays in Soweto, or probably maybe in Eastern Cape, can I be able to access that information? I can be able to use it as a tool to advocate for whatever changes that I would like to see happening around young people? That'd be my first question.
Thank you very much. The first part of the question, I'm not sure if I was understanding what the question was. Okay. But I understood the second question in terms of access to information and the distribution thereof. If I may just get the first part of the question, please.
Okay. What I meant is one of the gaps that I feel they still exist around youth participation is that you still find the way young people are selected or how are they probably used. It's, I don't think it's much more adequate enough in a sense that issues, for instance, for a young person who stays in Gauteng, which is more developed as a young person, issues for people who stays in Gauteng are different from someone who stays in the Eastern Cape, for starters. And in the selection criteria or in the structures that exist that you alluded to in terms of the National Youth Development Agency, do those issues speak directly to those demarcations, or is just a general approach towards young people's needs? I don't know if, yeah?
Thank you very much for the question. I felt I would answer the first question first. I think that South Africa, in my view, is a very dynamic and diverse country, but it also is representatives by young people. It's a highly political society with a lot of activists, and in everything that we do, it's all about self-representation, which informs how South Africa does certain things. A direct example I will use, the National Development Youth Agency, which replaced the Youth Commission. It's a structure where an advert goes out and young people and their formations actually nominate and submit the young people that they feel that they would represent them. Of course, the challenges and the limitations has always been because it's media driven. If what happens to a poor young person who's sitting in a rural area somewhere who doesn't read the newspaper? Because then what happens is the young people that get nominated on different structures would be those young people whose organizations read the papers and they have the opportunity to respond. So the issue of effective participation in a South African context, as much as it's a constitutional right, because public participation is enshrined in the South African Constitution, and as a member of the South African citizen, you need to participate. Obviously, the challenges has always been reaching young people, especially those in rural communities. I would be the first one to admit that we are doing more in your urban and peri-urban and townships, but we have not really done well as a country to be able to reach young people in rural communities. Obviously that with the establishment of the National Youth Development Agency, but also the implementation and establishment of a new department on rural development, automatically, and the newly adopted rural development strategy, which has a very strong component of young people that addresses issues of young people around decent jobs, job creation, access to HIV services, sexual education, is all included in the rural development strategy. With the new ministry that has been established, we believe that all of that would go a long way in addressing the number of the challenges that young people have been experiencing. Selection of young people, of course, in a South African context, if I conclude the last part, there are a number of gaps. Amongst them, it's obviously geographic spread, geographic location. We all know South Africa has amongst, in the world, the highest illiteracy rates. And those are also young people. The highest unemployed in South Africa are young people. And we're doing a lot of work in terms of doing that, not for young people, but with young people, so that they are able to inform. We've got young parliamentarians. I mean, the youngest parliamentarian in South Africa was born in 1980. And those that were born in the 70s. So we're trying to say, as we make laws in the South African context, young people must be able to influence legislation at that level to ensure that when legislation goes through parliament, I mean, I joined parliament at the age of 21. I was a young person, ensuring that policies, legislation would not go through parliament without me as a young person on behalf of the many young people that could not make it to parliament. Is represented by ourselves. And I think that goes into the many other programs that we implement, including HIV and AIDS. Thank you very much.
Nkonzo, did you have a follow-up question? Or?
Yeah, actually, I do. Thank you for the response. My follow-up question is actually around more on dissemination of the policies, exactly. Meaning, yes, South Africans, it's a very dynamic country and politically driven and so forth. And one of the things which keep on coming up is that today's issues are being addressed. You've been addressing this, you've been creating that. But at the ground level, the question is, if someone doesn't have access to this information now, and by the time these issues have been addressed, there'll be a lot of issues being packed up. So is there any immediate action that is actually talking to such issues? For instance, I'll just make an example. There's this organization I'm working with, and some of the young people are living with HIV, and some of them, they are actually defaulted because of the current issue, I mean, issues of employment. Now, for someone whose CT4 count is above 350 and so forth, he seemed to be healthy and so forth and good, then he's supposed to work. But now, because of the job security, he actually deliberately default from the treatment so that he can get the grant. And this talks to, again, the comprehensivity of the policies itself. How often do we get to review the policies? What's the monitoring mechanism which exists? But my question right now is that at this point in time, there's an issue right now with young people defaulting from ARVs. What can the government do with regards to that? A lot of young people are getting infected in the rural areas. They're unable to get information. What can be done now so that those people can get that information and use, for instance, one can use the policy to hold the government accountable for what they've promised.
If I may take liberties as a moderator,
yeah.
I've heard a couple of questions
yes.
that, and I think that are really important. And they're again, when we were speaking about how do we make this relevant to as many youth issues as we can, I think the issue of engaging with rural youth was something that came up. And as Michelle whispered to me, this is something that is probably fairly universal, is how do we reach universal youth? Another issue that I just heard raised was how do we bridge the gap between where policy is made and how long it takes to actually become yes. implemented and reach some of the youth who might be most affected. And there was another question that came up for me earlier, which was around who gets selected to be involved. So when we're talking about youth participation and youth involvement, it's really easy to pick a youth and say, here, we have a youth. And the question that I had when Michelle was talking about the CCMs is, who are those young people who are involved in 48 countries? You know, so it's it's great to say, well, you know, or not great to say that there's 48 young people involved, or sorry, young people involved in 48 countries, but what does that selection process look like? So I want to table those questions and also make sure that all of the other young people have a chance to ask their questions. And then, as we mentioned, it's really important for us to have some dialogue with the audience as well. So is that okay if I put those out there as questions that all of us should be thinking about and hopefully come up with some concrete recommendations around? All right. Who would like to go next?
I can go.
Okay.
I didn't know the number of country coordinated mechanisms that actually have a young person there, so I think it's a great start. And I guess one of the challenges that we have, like as representatives of youth organizations, is the fact that how do we show like the adults who are members of the CCM why it's important to include us. And I was really happy to see that last week UNAIDS was launching this new report showing that 16 countries, two in the Caribbean and the other 14 in Africa, are showing that there is a decrease on the number of new HIV infections. So actually, we're seeing that prevention among you, among young people is working, and we know that part of it, it's because youth organizations, I mean, not only, but part of it, are being part of this prevention revolution that Michelle Sidibe from UNAIDS has been talking a lot about during the last two or three days. So I guess that with this kind of information, we can show that we do have something important to say, because we are probably the only like group that is showing this decrease. But what else do you think we can use as a tool to convince the people who are on the CCMs, who are of course governments, the different ministries of the and different levels, like, or the big NGOs in our countries that are usually those taking the place sometimes on the CCMs.
Can you explain CCM just really quickly?
Sorry, yeah. CCM is Country Coordinating Mechanism, which is the group of people who decides what the global, who creates the proposals that are submitted to the Global Fund, and then in case that they are approved, the money goes not to the CCM, but through like other organization. But the CCM is the one that that decides who, like what kind of people should be targeted, and how much money should this every kind of intervention get, right?
Yes, if I can just add a few things here. You're absolutely right. I'd like everyone to realize that the CCM is more than just a structure, you know, who is in it and so on. It is I think it's a key step in building democracy around health. You know, for many years, think of it, developmental aid to countries, was somehow donor-driven. It's the donor government or the donor entity that would decide on how much money would go to one country or to another, or to which disease for which interventions. I think where the Global Fund has really been a revolution in conceptually is that the Global Fund is country-driven. So what we're doing, what we fund, is what the countries request us to fund. And when I say the country, that's where it's important, the CCM is important. It's not just the Minister of Health. It is a collective entity of all the forces in the country that are ready to come collectively together to fight the epidemic. And that is the government, that is the civil society, that is the bilateral, the multilateral agencies, the private sector, everyone, because the concept is that you can't fight an epidemic alone. You have, and this is where we're saying, and we're saying today, youth has to be there as well, so that the specific needs of youth and the messages you can bring justify a strong and I hope better in the future participation in the CCMs. Now, how to? And of course, your point is well taken. Youth is hugely diverse. But there can't be 356 representatives of youth at one given CCM. A CCM is effective, is also a small group of people who come together to decisions. So how do people come to CCMs? Well, first, the CCM itself has to sort of accept a new member. And this is where I would say what you're saying on UNAIDS was very important. I think UNAIDS should be a very, and will be, a very strong ally to youth in sort of helping you gain, if I may say so, a seat on the CCM. That's certainly one of your strongest allies. And of course, UNICEF when they are on the board, because that's the very job of UNICEF. And Tony, I'm sure you wouldn't contradict me on this. It depends on the countries. UN agencies are often represented by one particular agency. The second thing is that that person who would be the representative would have to have some legitimacy representing that youth diversity which you mentioned. And for a number of constituencies, we have basically an election process. So where there is an organization, or let's say a youth organization, that is an umbrella to many other youth organizations, that organization should probably be the one sitting there. When there are diverse organizations, I would hope that a forum is created with the support of UNICEF, with the support of UNAIDS, and that forum brings an election process that will designate a board member. And the last thing I'd like to say is that it's not enough to be sort of legitimized by an election process. When you sit on the CCM, your job is then to interact with your constituency and constantly report on where are the issues, where are the discussions, and then make sure everything is said on the CCM comes back to your constituency and make sure that all of the voices of the constituency within that diversity of youth you were talking about are brought to the CCM. And it may seem a bit complex, but again, let me say, conceptually, it's key. It's bringing the decisions on health, the decisions on how the funding will go, dependent on a democratic process involving every entity that has to be part of the fight against the epidemic.
Yeah, can I just respond quickly? Yeah, I think that's everything you said. It's really good. And I think that we, as youth organizations, also need to strengthen the movements that it's creating this demand, because we know that in many countries there's just no, it's not that there's no young youth organizations who want to be involved, but it's just that a lot of times the Global Fund is such a difficult things to understand that it's just so hard to,
I mean,
to get involved.
Your point is well taken. I hear from so many constituencies that the processes are complex. The CCM is difficult to approach. I hear that from many civil society organizations. We just have to fight for it to change.
Sorry, my mic keeps falling down. I know that Tony has something that he wants to say, and I also know that we still haven't heard from Stephanie and Nikhil, who represent two constituents within youth communities who are often, I think, not as included or as heard as they should be. And so if it's okay with you, we'll hear from the two of them, and I know that they have specific questions for you as well, so you can include your response in terms of what they're going to be asking. And then we really do want to turn it to the floor, because that's really important, and we started really late, so I do apologize that we're rushing through this a little bit.
So am I supposed
Stephanie?
Sorry, Anthony. It was a pleasure to have my question directed you. Months ago, I found out that I was directing my question at a UNICEF member, and I was very, very excited, because growing up, you see the UNICEF ads and how much they care about access to education and things that really aren't that important in Australia for positive youth. So my question really is based on my childhood experience of growing up positive and not really having anyone protect my right to an education, because it was considered as waste of time, because we weren't meant to be living longer than 13. And it was a very humbling experience to me when someone said to me, you deserve a right to an education because I believe you're going to live a long time. And that was really the first time I felt worthy as a human being and a part of a society that actually did want me. So my question to you is, how can UNICEF help young people living with HIV access vital services like an education without stigma and discrimination preventing them to do so?
Okay. Before you answer, we're going to go to Nikhil. If you can ask your question, and then we'll have Tony answer.
Young people who use drugs are not being recognized and heard at every level. We have been criminalized, discriminated, stigmatized. Our right to health, our right to participation are violated. And in this context, we are also acutely aware of the fact that within the UN system, UNODC is a key lead agency that leads drug and harm reduction. But UNICEF, being a lead agency for the protection and well-being of children and most at-risk adolescents, in this context, what will be the UNICEF position, or how can UNICEF facilitate young people who use drugs and harm reduction?
Okay, thank you. Well, we'll go to you now. If you can, yeah. if it can be brief, though.
If I may, before I answer the two of you, if I could simply comment on some of the earlier pieces very, very briefly. First of all, on how UNICEF listens to and is accountable to young people. I don't want to go at length into our governing structure, but our executive board are governments. So it's very hard to tell a government that you will have young people, but about a third of our resources come from national committees raised from private individuals. And I know when I was the chair of the U.S. Fund, we had young representation on the board, and I think many of our national committees are working on that as well. And I just want to make the point that I have been over the years to a number of events at which people would remember, oh yes, there's young people, let's trot out some young people, they can tell their stories, and then we'll get back to the discussion among the rest of us. And that simply cannot be. And so I would suggest that in various ways we need to involve young people, not just so that they are asking questions and they are present, but so that they are offering their suggestions and their comments and their constructive criticism as well. One of the ways that I'm looking at that, and I've just been on the job 2 months, one of the first things I asked, in fact, was whether there might not be some way over the internet for me to be hearing more directly from young people with their suggestions. This faces, and we're working on this, it faces some obstacles. First of all, that I am technologically challenged. I have never tweeted or twitted or whatever you call it. I was told I have a Facebook, but I've never been on it. So I'm going to have to work out how I can do this in a way that does not mean we either get open for business and then nobody gets in touch with us, in which case my feelings will be hurt, or we're so flooded that I can't then get back to people. But we're working on that. But I want to change on this whole subject of the involvement of young people, change it to something I think very practical, which is not only how do we hear young people's voices, but how do we, and UNICEF does this all over the world all the time, how do we involve them in programs in ways in which they're more effective than anybody else? And just from personal experience, I volunteered for a UNICEF project in South Africa, in KwaZulu-Natal and Eastern Cape, 5 or 6 years ago, in communities there. And discovered that in the communities, in fact, it was the young people who knew better about what was going on, obviously, in their lives than the older officials. And UNICEF is doing more all the time to, in its specific programming, learn from the young kids as we target our efforts, and to use them. And when I visited HIV/AIDS projects in Swaziland and Mozambique some years ago, went to a UNICEF-supported radio station in which young people were broadcasting about condoms and safe behavior to other young people and talking to them over the radio in ways that adults never could. So we need to integrate them into our programs, all of us, more and more. And we need to work together with young people in advocating on the kinds of issues that you raised. For example, we just issued today a remarkable report called Blame and Banishment about the most rapidly growing area of HIV infection in the world, and that is Eastern Europe and Russia. And at the heart of that was the fact that so long as when drug users, HIV-positive young people, etc., are criminalized and are blamed for that behavior rather than helped and supported, it is entirely understandable that they're going to avoid authorities rather than coming in to try to seek help, and that replicates the cycle. So we need to, as we did in this report, advocate very much for that. We need to come to your point also, besides getting the information out more, we need to work with young people to advocate with governments in the places that it's relevant to repeal such laws as laws that require parental approval for people under 18 to come and get tested, which again is a way of keeping young people from the information, the most vital information of all, and that is testing, so that they will be more nurtured than punished. And we have a long way to go, but I can tell you UNICEF's going to keep working on this very hard.
Will you commit to that?
I'm sorry?
So what I'm hearing from you is a commitment that UNICEF will actively advocate to change policies around consent.
I was raised to mean what I say, and I just said it.
Thank you. Well, before we go to the audience, I'm going to sum up a bit sort of what we've had here in the panel so far. We've heard of what's been done. We've had national programs, national ministries, departments that have been created focusing on young people. We also heard from the Global Fund that, well, there are mechanisms, there is participation of young people in certain countries in the country coordinating mechanisms, and there's also representation at the global level. And we heard from UNICEF the different programs that they work in regards to young people and also how young people also participate in the programming and design. But we also heard the different gaps. And we also heard, well, as those that Caitlin mentioned in regards to involving rural youth, the real representation of young people from different diversities. We also have heard how can we actually ensure that youth participation in the country coordinating mechanisms is a reality and that it is diverse. And also, how can we integrate into those responses and participation of young people, also young people who are injecting drug users and harm reduction programs, and also targeting young people who are born positive, and also the issues of age consent. So basically, those are the gaps that we've seen. So we're going to turn it to the audience. I see we have a very interesting line, so we're going to go ahead.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Li Ping. I work with the Word Is campaign. I'm the point person of this session. And just now, when the 4:30 kind of arrived, and we were told the Minister of Health in South Africa will not attend this session. And I would like to represent all of the young people here to express our disappointment of the last minute change. And I'm wondering if the Minister of Health in South Africa could break his commitment to attend a youth session, how he's going to protect the human rights of all of the young people in South Africa and to achieve universal access. And And I would like to ask Dr. Zuno if you have any kind of commitment, if you could make any commitment to make sure you will bring our disappointed to Minister of Health when, after this conference, and make sure he will develop a strategy to protect young people's human rights and to achieve universal access. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're going to take a few more questions and then take it back to the panel for time interest.
Hi, my name is Raoul Fransen. I'm based in Amsterdam, the Netherlands. Caitlin, you were very right when you said that people, when they participate in a panel like this, they take a risk, and it's courageous, and I compliment each and every one of you. But it shouldn't be difficult. We all make mistakes, and it shouldn't be so hard to confront each other about it. And it's interesting that we have sort of the best kid and the worst kid in the class on the stage in terms of UNICEF and the Global Fund, where UNICEF for years and years and years, especially at the international level, has been very, very, very tokenistic, and where the Global Fund has really embraced the principles of meaningful involvement. And I know Anthony Lake is new in the job, but you have to catch up. And I'm really pleased to hear the commitments that you've expressed, but we've been working with UNICEF for many, many, many years, and it's been nothing more than tokenistic, except for a few very good country-level experiences. What's different in terms of accountability for young people and youth organizations is that youth organizations don't necessarily have the structures or the capacity to be held accountable, so that needs to be invested in. So, because accountability is a two-way street, and youth organizations also need to be held accountable. But the difference is the structure and the capacity. So, I hope we can work in partnership, in true partnership, in meaningful partnership, and making sure that accountability is more than just the word.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. If we could ask the next questions to be very, very precise and short, because we're running out of time. Thank you.
My name is Remy Shao from Zambia. Firstly, we should get Tony on Facebook to bridge the gap between young people and the established leaders. I'd just like to say that I think the Global Fund has potential to be one of the greatest allies that young people can ever have. And to say that the Global Fund would not detect what happens at country level perhaps is not being optimistic, in that we know that the person who has the money has more say in the AIDS response. In most countries, if you give them guidelines for their proposals, they would try by all means to write a proposal that fits in those guidelines so that they can get the funding. And I think that's the experience that I have seen. And if we can tell countries to include gender-sensitive programs in their proposals, then what can stop us to tell them to also include young people at each and every level of a mechanism at country levels? And it's not just on the CCM, it's from the start identifying the problem in the country, proposal writing, implementation, disbursing of funds, that we want young people to be included. And I'm going to push the envelope a little bit further for you, Michelle. If by the end of this session you would commit that the Global Fund is going to release guidelines to include young people at every point of collaboration at country level, I'll be the happiest young person living this room. And for the young leaders who are there and those that are seated in the audience, I think if such a thing happened, now how are you going to make sure that you also get back to the young people at the grassroots? What mechanism would you propose for a person like me who is here, you know, at the AIDS conference? If I go back home, how do I get to feed back to the youth that I claim I represent? Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take one more question, and then we're going to go back to the panel, and then we're going to see if we can go to the audience. But if you can be very, very, very concise.
I'll try to be, but I'm Igor Mokoro. I'm Igor Mokoro, and I'm a youth living with HIV from the Philippines. So I'm really interested with the Global Fund since we attended a training in South Africa, and there's a big movement for among young people to really get involved in this process. So I'm wondering how many CCM do we have in the world? And if we have 48 countries where youth are represented at the CCM, I'm wondering if these are youth-led organizations or are these are adult people representing young people? And if does the Global Fund has a plan to reach 90% to 100% representation of young people at the CCM worldwide, which I believe it can be enforced if only the Global Fund will come up with policies and guidelines set at the top level that must be implemented at the country level. And I believe it would be a fantastic objective for the Global Fund to adopt in order to achieve the goal of meaningful youth participation. I just want to cite an example in the Philippines. They said that there is an organization representing children and youth at the CCM, yet I believe that they are not a youth-led organization. And somehow there is a disconnection between them and the rest of youth and HIV community. So can we request these adult people, or can the Global Fund make an action to call for this organization representing young people at the CCM to step down and give opportunity to young people? And can the Global Fund make commitment to this to make this happen? Also, I would like to point, in terms of funding, can the Global Fund make a special call for application, even just for a small amount, for youth-led organizations, such as what happened with the Youth HIV Young Leaders Fund? And we talk about accountability and responsibility, yet can we make a mechanism where we can monitor and evaluate this progress so that in the next 2 years, or in the next conference, Michelle, you can tell us that these are the progress for young people, that we achieve this goal, that we achieve these objectives, and so we will not again call for meaningful youth participation, but perhaps we can celebrate the success that we have from this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Wow, what a great questions. We have such passion and it's great to see it. And I think it's really, really going to help us in really interacting and finding a way forward and more commitments and that really lead to action. I'm going to summarize briefly, go to the panel, and then we're going to come back to the audience. We had a few questions. The first one was from the minister, the deputy minister of South Africa, representation of the minister of health, how is he going to achieve universal access, and what is his commitment? Basically, highlighting the fact that he couldn't come to this session, and we really need to see some commitment from him. There was a second question in referral to UNICEF and saying, well, basically, UNICEF's policies worldwide have been tokenistic, and how can we bring those realities, those policies, how can we bring them to action, those commitments? Then there were a couple of questions for the Global Fund. How can we tell countries to bring the priorities and youth participation to country level? Can the Global Fund commit to emitting guidelines that ensure participation of young people at country level? And then there was a request for the Global Fund if you can issue a proposal, a call out for funding that can provide funding for youth organizations. And there was also a question of how many CCMs worldwide are there? And also, how can we monitor and evaluate those applications? And then there was a question for the young leaders and if we have participation in the country coordinating mechanisms, how can we ensure that rural youth are also participating?
So, my question is, I want to ask specific commitment from Dr. Zunu and how she is going to back to the country and bring our disappointed to the Minister of Health in South Africa, and how they are going to make an effective mechanism to protect human rights of young people to make sure they could access to HIV prevention, treatment, care, and support. Thank you.
We were going to try to avoid timed responses, but we're going to have to go to them because we know that there's more questions from the floor, and there's a tendency to use a lot of words sometimes that you know, let's just see how concise we can be. So we're going to give 1 minute to each of the responders, with the exception of Michelle, because there was about 5 questions. So you have 1 minute, 30 seconds. and we will hopefully have a bit more time to follow up again, and also with the youth panelists. But this is the way it's got to be if we're going to try to get as many questions on the table. So 1 minute, starting now.
Okay. For me?
Sorry, for the
Okay.
Thank you very much. I think it is important. I'll pass on the message to the Minister of Health. But I think it's important that as audiences, as young people, we understand that South Africa, it's a country that is governed by a collective. So as I sit here, I serve on the Interministerial Committee on HIV and AIDS, which the minister is a member of. And I think as I sit here, I should be able to respond and make whatever the required commitments that the minister could have made, that I thought it was important for me to clarify. That I don't think the disappointment of my sitting here and the minister not showing up, we are a collective, and as cabinet members, we take collective responsibilities for the responsibilities. But the message of the disappointment will be passed on. Let me also say that South Africa...
5 seconds.
South Africa is well known for the human rights. And young people's rights are as protected as anybody's rights by the South African Constitution. As I sit here, I haven't thought in my parliamentary career of 10 years that I passed the most progressive Children's Rights Act in South Africa that actually makes sure that children from the age of 12 have access to what UNICEF is being asked to do. Access to information on sex and sexuality.
With all due respect, I'm going to have to cut you off. It's been 1 minute, 30 seconds. And I do apologize, but we have to continue to address young people's concerns with the other panelists. Tony.
So I'm not sure I heard a question other than hasn't UNICEF been paternalistic in the past? And I don't think so, at least in regard to its work. 86% of UNICEF staff are out in the field working every day for children because they passionately believe in children's rights. The paternalism may come in how UNICEF is managed. And as I said, we're going to be working on this. And I cannot tell you how far I went. And my grandchildren would laugh at me when I said that I'm actually going to look at Facebook as one way of making UNICEF less so and more engaged with youth. But I will say to the youth here, if I may, all of this has been about how young people can be more involved in governance. And I would challenge you also, come work with us in the field, in our programs, to make them more effective, because young people are more effective reaching young people than anybody else. And that certainly is not paternalism, or even in my case, grand paternalism.
6 seconds to spare.
How about that?
No, good.
I'll reserve the 6 seconds for later.
Michelle gets to take the 6 seconds. 1 minute, 36.
Thank you. The Global Fund is an inclusive mechanism. I hope that was clear from everything I said. So don't think it's the executive director that will say, this has to be done this way, this has to be done this way. And fortunately, it is our board, which, as I said, is fully inclusive of all constituencies, that takes decisions such as whether we would add specific guidelines on youth representation in CCMs or in the way the proposals are written. So I cannot commit for my board, but what I can commit to do, and I'm committing to do, is to bring this issue to our board. And I would actually, the best way to do for me that for me would be to bring it together with Shanti, and I do commit to that. Second question, 48, yes. Not only 48 is not enough, as we discussed earlier, but to answer the specific question, I'm not sure that those 48 representatives are really youth-led organizations, and it may well be that in some cases it's just representation, and that has to be worked. And finally, thank you. I commit to report in 2 years from now in Washington, if I'm still the executive director of the Global Fund, on the progress.
And I got 6 seconds. I'm going to exercise my 6 seconds and say, and I hope you are in 2 years. Thank you, Michelle.
I just wanted to see if any of the youth panelists have a response, because I think it's unfortunate that we started late, because I think right now we're really getting into what we initially introduced in the beginning of the session, was that there are very real gaps between the experience that's felt by young people in this room, not felt, but that is there, and the perceptions, the commitments, and really great commitments, and that we're hearing from the adult leaders, but there's clearly a disconnect, and there's clearly, and I think there's frustration, because for some of us we keep feeling that, and we want to know how can we really change things, and we are hearing a few commitments.
Be more specific. Where do you feel the disconnects here?
Well, I think one of the things that we've been trying to do in the last few days, like some of the youth organizations that are present here and that are part of the Vienna Youth Force, is to make sure that it's not only as Anthony was saying before, like that our voices are heard, but that we are like integrated to the programs. And I think we really need to work with you, and so like UNICEF can help a lot to keep creating. Data and guidelines that are going to help us a lot, such as the technical guidelines on sexuality education that UNESCO created a while ago and that created a lot of controversy, and that were really good, by the way, of course. And
that's a commitment.
Oh, super. but it's also part of, I guess, our commitment as young people, that we need to recognize that we are really privileged to be here in Vienna, and that we had the chance to travel here and get all this information. But now we really have to go back to our countries and make sure that all the people who are not here get this information, not only through the internet, but that when every time we have a chance to speak in different training sessions or whatever, we give this information back, and we make sure that they also hold these leaders accountable in Washington in 2 years and in our countries as well.
Okay. Thank you, Ricardo. We're going to go really shortly to the audience. We have 4 people. 5? Okay, well, if we get to the other 3, it's going to depend on the first 2, so I'm going to ask you to be very, very short and brief.
Hello?
Thank you.
Hi, my name's David. I'm from the UK. I've written a very long question, but I'll keep it brief. So, although we haven't been able to obtain any official figures from the International AIDS Society, the presence of extensive merchandise at the conference suggests that there has been a great level of pharmaceutical involvement and sponsorship of the event. Well-conducted research proves that the presence has a statistically significant increase upon behaviours and attitudes of practitioners and patients. So my question is that, as many of us are members of the International AIDS Society, is it correct and necessary or morally right that they have accepted this money? I know that's quite controversial, but I thought I'd throw it out there. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. My name is Joy. I'm from Nigeria. My question goes to the Executive Director of Global Fund. And the question I want to find out is, how do you, Global Fund, ensure accountability of the CCM at the country level? Because in my country, we have huge representative on the Global Fund, but like we have said earlier, how are they selected? And they remain on the board for a very long time, and they are not reporting back to the constituency they represent. So how do we ensure accountability of the member of CCM?
Hi, my name is Joya Banerjee from the Global Youth Coalition on HIV/AIDS and from the Harvard School of Public Health. This question is for Anthony Lake. Caitlin had mentioned earlier a question of who is at the table, and I wanted to commend UNICEF for taking extraordinary leadership a number of years ago with the Most at-Risk Adolescents Technical Support Group that brought young people who inject drugs, who are sex workers, MSMs, etc., to the table to dialogue with their government officials and decision makers. But unfortunately, after a transition of leadership, this group dissolved. And I wanted to know what steps UNICEF is going to take, along with other UN agencies, to ensure that these transitions of leadership don't sort of annihilate the potential for continuity and lasting impact, because millions of dollars are spent on things like Unite for Children, Unite Against AIDS, or AIDS 2031, et cetera, and we don't really see what's going to happen down the line from that.
Hello, everyone. My name is Nuru, and I'm from Uganda. I'm acknowledging that some programs have been done for many young people living with HIV, and we are really grateful. But it's also worth noting that little has been done for young people who were perinatally infected. And I am one of those, I think, who have been living with HIV for the longest time because I was perinatally infected and I'm 24 years. And many times these things have just been talked about, but we haven't been included in many agendas. So mine is just an appeal for most for space and inclusion of young people who are also born with HIV.
I want to start by thanking Michel for his commitment to involve more youth in the Global Fund, and I still remember how warmly you welcomed me when I arrived at the board, so thank you for that. Of course, I'm very happy to be the first youth representative on the board, but it's not about me, it's about all the young people out there who don't have access to youth-friendly treatment and care, whose human rights are violated, so let's make that clear. I just want to respond to the question of Igor. There are indeed 48 CCMs having a youth represented, but a part of them is from ministries, so ministries of youth, etc. And we are not sure at all how far that are actually young people having a voice. So currently I'm working with the secretariat and with youth organizations to conduct research on how far they have a voice and to encourage the CCMs to do more on that. And as Michelle said, it's not easy for the Global Fund to oblige CCMs to do certain things. The Global Fund can just recommend things. And currently the CCM guidelines are being revised, and I know that youth organizations are explicitly mentioned in them. And Ricardo will go to the CCM meeting next week, and together with some young people that are involved in Global Fund issues, we will give him some comments to take with him to that meeting. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you. Our last question.
Hi, my name is Alice Armstrong. I'm a HIV nurse specialist in an adolescent unit in London. And my question is for Stephanie. Stephanie, as a young person who's born and living with HIV, I was just wondering if you can give me and other healthcare professionals a practical level that we can encourage other young people to be involved in leadership in HIV. And also, congratulations for getting up there today and all the work that you have been doing through Positive Women Victoria.
Thank you. Okay, I'm gonna sum up. We had a question for the Global Fund, and it's how the Global Fund keeps track of the country coordinating mechanisms and the reporting at country level, and also how can we ensure the accountability of those country coordinating mechanisms. Then we had two questions for UNICEF. Well, we had a comment that UNICEF created a task force, I don't remember clearly, but.
What was it? Technical group.
Yeah. Of most high-risk young people, and how there are many other initiatives that are created for involvement of young people and funding, and how can we ensure continuity even though there is a change of leadership. Then we also have, there's little done for young people born infected with HIV. How can we guarantee participation and inclusion of young people living with HIV? That was a question also.
And then we had a question for Stephanie as well.
And the comment on pharma.
And the comment funding. On pharma. Yes. Okay, so how about this? We will stick with our minute responses that were directed at the specific panelists, and then we were going to ask all of our panelists to provide closing statements around their commitment so that we're not here talking about the same thing 2 years from now. And how about within those closing statements, we'll address the pharma question. Yeah? So everybody answers it. Since it was a generic question.
A generic? Well, that's pharma.
Anyways. Who should go first?
Okay, 3, 2, 1, go. Ready? We take accountability very seriously when it comes to CCM. Every proposal, because the CCM is truly the responsible entity in country in bringing the funding that is needed to that country. So whenever we receive at the Global Fund a request in response to our call for offers, that request will be very carefully screened for how was the CCM composed and has every member of the CCM signed on the proposal, so that we are absolutely certain that the proposal that we received really reflects a consensus opinion of all the entities around the table, which I repeat are the government, the civil society, the private sector, the bilaterals, the multilaterals at the country level. And this is where I look forward to having more, as we discussed, youth representatives signing on in the future.
So we'll go to Anthony.
Okay, in 1 minute, just very briefly. How do we involve young people more on this this cause? And it is a cause, and the answer is at all levels and in every way. And again, I would urge everybody in this room to, when you have discussions like this, to go beyond the accountability and governance questions to substantive exchanges, because I think young people have so much to contribute and so much to suggest when it comes to substance. And so I look forward to more and more substantive discussions in various ways. On the transition, I cannot guarantee that there will not be changes, because there will. That's why I took this job, and in 10 seconds, you will see UNICEF more and more working in the poorest communities in the with the most disadvantaged children, including explicitly children with disabilities, children living in indigenous areas, and children living with HIV. And that is what we're going to be doing, and I could go on and on. I will at other and have been at other panels. But that is our pledge, and that will mean change. But that change, which is not new for UNICEF, but simply all the more of a focus on UNICEF's traditional mission, certainly does not mean abandoning panels such as the one that you discussed. And I wish you would find me afterwards so I could hear more explicitly about this, because in the transition I've been going through, I'm quite sure we haven't canceled anything like that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I have to cut you off there.
Thank you to the person who had the question. I'm not sure where you've gone now, but HIV nurses have been a big part of my life. I mean, every week they were holding me down to get my blood tests done and encouragement to take my pills. So really, thank you for your work that you're doing. The most important thing for me and my work in leadership has been my mentors. I mean, I truly am a child of Positive Women in Victoria. The women instilled in me that you do not shut up about issues that are important to you, and you really have to scream at people, especially when you're a young person at 13 going to conferences, your issues. So for me and for you, maybe you could work out some sort of mental program that can instill in children of all ages that they can do it, they can get a mic in front of people and get their message heard and get it heard to people that actually can do something about it. Thank you so much.
So in terms of closing comments, we'll have a minute for each of the panelists to briefly sum up commitments that they made during this time, and also any sort of final reflections or questions they want to maybe put back out there as well to us. And I do really want to acknowledge that we know that there's a lot of important work being done. And we talked as panelists and moderators before here that that really we did want to ask challenging questions, and we wanted to really look at the gaps. And we wanted to really, because you know, there's a lot of discussion around youth participation and a lot of progress has been made in the past 10, 15 years. And so, and we're all very aware of that. So really it was about asking difficult questions, and hopefully some of those have been addressed, and probably a lot of them haven't been. So we need to hear about how we can, what we're all committing to in terms of moving forward, and also within that minute to address the farmer question at some point in there. Nkonzo, would you like to go first?
Oh, okay, since I'm the first one to start, I just want to say I'm glad to hear some of the commitments from our leaders, and I just want to pose this question to everyone to say, what is it that we mean by youth leadership? I probably want to move from youth participation, but to say it is high time that young people are recognized as leaders and should be treated as leaders and giving those spaces to exercise their leadership and to be coached as well, than being seen as participants within the decision-making spaces. Thank you.
Well, I guess my commitment is that as a member of GAICA and the Vienna Youth Force, we'll try to follow up the commitments that other people are making during the conference, because this is like a process that we've been building since 2004. I wasn't there. I was too young back there. I'm 24. Well, I'm 25 now. I'm not that old still. But yeah, it's particularly with all these new wonderful plans that we're building, with especially with some UN or, agencies like UNFPA, UNAIDS, and now with UNICEF, I guess. So yeah, we'll make sure that things happen and that we keep demanding accountability for a while after the conference.
Thank you. I'm going to go back to Anthony. Yes.
Just very briefly, the farmers.
Oh, right, farmers.
Let me just say, we weren't involved, at least I wasn't in the organization of this conference, although I think it's quite wonderful, so I can't comment specifically on that, but I will say that one of the things we have to keep doing, as we have been doing, is to work hard to bring down the prices of drugs by engaging the pharmaceutical companies and the suppliers of nutritional supplements as well to get the lowest possible prices, to try to push back when there are patent claims that are unfair, and to help in the production of generic drugs, something actually I've been interested in now for some years when I was at the U.S. Fund, in getting the provision of generic drugs for pediatric ART. So we have to keep engaged with them and pushing them to do good. Oh, and let me just one last point. I've mentioned all how passionate everybody at UNICEF is, including me, in our work for children. I just want to emphasize, this is not because this is a feel-good exercise. It is because every child equally has the right to everything that UNICEF can do for them. The right.
Does it turn? Sorry, now I'm in a panic.
Four
Which
seconds.
Way? Okay, first on pharma. Let me say, I have organized an IAS conference in 2003, and I can tell you there are two main sources of budget to organize a conference. One is the registration fee, and we want to keep it as low as possible. The other is sponsoring by pharma. So to me, the question is not whether pharma should be there or not. It's to put the right conditions on the participation of pharma so we avoid the conflicts of interest. For example, having pharma-sponsored satellites outside the area or at some specific hours of the day. But I would find it difficult that a conference like this one, which is close to a $7 million budget, happens without the sponsoring of pharma. On what Anthony said, I fully agree we have to work on decreasing the prices of drugs, but I would say I do not see a reasonable future just in waiting for X years before a drug comes into the public domain so that we can do the generic. We need second-line drugs more urgently, and I think we will need to revisit the trade agreements. I mean, the Doha cycle of discussion started in 2001 and has not yet been completed. Thank you, sorry. Now, my final statement would be that to thank you for inviting me here. I really heard the message about more space, more inclusion, and thank you because it took me this session to hear it and feel it from being here, from looking at the audience from where we sit and be where with the fellow panelists. I commit, as I said, to report to you on the progress in the many areas you've seen in Washington in 2 years, and I commit to take that very seriously. And finally, let me say that I wouldn't wish UNICEF to sit there, Global Fund to sit here, and government and Rete to sit there. I hope you also see us all working together. And I can tell you, I've been interacting with Tony now for just a few weeks, but it's a fantastic spirit of partnership and working together, and I would like all of you to know that. And you've heard a lot about South Africa these days. South Africa has radically turned its policies, and I also look forward very much to working with the new way South Africa is addressing AIDS.
Well, it's great to be part of this event, but yes, I think we already have a lot of documents available for the universal access and the Millennium Development Goal. So it's a high time for us, for all the leaders, world leaders, to translate their words, commitment into action, and to make a universal access and Millennium Development Goal a reality, because we, the young people who use drugs, are already hit by the epidemic. If we are going to make a reality, then you have to put our immediate actions. Thank you.
I would just like to echo the Worldwide WCA's comment of, if you're a youth and you're going to be at the table, bring a friend. Don't sit there by yourself, because it is a burden. I know that I was the only youth on my board for about a year, and I brought a friend. And it is just so much better, because not all youth have the same opinion. Youth fight amongst each other just as much as the next person. So having different ideas from different youth is extremely important. So if it's at all possible, bring someone with different views, different opinions, and different experiences. And thank you very much for coming today.
Much for allowing me to stand in for the minister. I hope that I've done a good job of it. And I wish to confirm that in the country coordinating mechanism for South Africa, young people are represented by young people, nominated by young people, and they have a period to serve for 3 years, and another young person comes in. To also say that our commitment indeed continues to say that we will continue to ensure that young people, as per the Children's Act, have access to sexual education, they've got access to condoms, and they take full responsibility for and be involved in their medical choices from the age of 12, as per our act, and we will, as government, continue to ensure that the resources are available for young people to be able to implement the respective programs, but also for them to be able to be ushered and mentored into leadership positions so that they are able to take up the space as older people live. And to say that the South African budget does have a component of the youth budget, and it does respond to many challenges young people face, and we hope that working with young people together, we can do more. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We would like to thank every single panelist here for your frankness, for your openness, and for the dialogue we have been able to have. We would also like to thank the audience for your participation and your activeness. And we hope that in 2 more years, we don't come here with the same kind of session, but hopefully more follow-up and also an update on where we are. And we thank you for all the commitments made, and also for all the young people, and for this dialogue on accountability that isn't just one-sided, but it's really much how can we all work together for a better response.
And I also wanted to say, too, that we wanted to thank the International AIDS Society, because we didn't organize this session. This was a non-abstract-driven session, so it was conceptualized by a committee, and we were all of us invited. And so I think it was a great step. We weren't. Li Ping is shaking her head. Oh, I don't know. The conference organizing committee. Thank you for clarifying. The conference organizing committee, who the leadership and advocacy committee, who invited us to this session. And I think something that was mentioned is that there's very few sessions like this that happen within the main conference program. So we have a really strong youth pavilion, we have a really strong youth networking zone, lots of sessions, the pre-conference, lots of stuff that happens outside. But again, we need to integrate it more and we need to have more sessions like this. So we thank the organizing committee. We do thank the conference for providing us with this space and these Oprah chairs and the mics and the tech support.
And just some final words. Please, everybody, you're welcome to go to the Youth Pavilion and also visit us there and check out the commitments desk and also all the different activities that are going on there. So thank you.
Thank you.